Well, folks, we are waiting on our special guests to show up tonight. If they do, if we can get through these technical difficulties, please excuse the delay. I'm up and running, full power, ready to go. Working on getting everything going. We should be streaming three platforms tonight. We should be streaming my personal Facebook page, P3's Facebook page, and YouTube, P3 Productions. This is a new system, so have patience with us. Looks like Randy might be coming in, if we can get him in. Can you hear me now? I think it's going to be a signal issue. Can you hear me?
Nope.
Well, we got Patrick. See if we can get Randy in. I might have to have Randy call. You there, Patrick?
Yep.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. We are actually live at the moment.
Howdy ho, everyone.
Looks like we got some viewers also. We're actually, this is a new one for us, Patrick. We are actually live on three platforms simultaneously. I don't know if you caught that live deal I did the other night with everybody. We broadcasted like seven different places, but we didn't get it correct. Some of the places we was broadcasting, all they could see was my face because I was running off another camera. Now we're everybody's going to be able to see everybody's face. I don't know why they'd want to see mine. I'm ugly.
I got a face for radio myself.
That's me. I got a face for a mask. Hopefully we can get Randy on here. Randy, if you hear me, you just call in, man. We can get you to call in, and I know I can talk to you that way. We've done it before. See if I can hear him. We folks, this is totally an impromptu. As soon as we get fired up here in a minute, we don't even really know what we're going to talk about tonight. But with us, you never know. It could go any direction, at any time.
Well, I've been dealing with Shorty, my tracking partner. He's got a guy that's been trying to get a place investigated, and I'm a little hesitant on it, but there's some issues there, but I'm gonna call and talk to the guy and see what's going on with him, and it may be interesting. I don't know. I mean, I'm not down anybody. It's just that guy has been digging at me for a while now.
To get you to come investigate?
And no, he's been digging at who's Patrick Bond. Patrick? What communities does he belong to? I want to know his community that he belongs to, and I am ordered, I had my national officer look me in the eye and order me to keep my mouth shut about any of this and have no affiliation with that community and this subject matter.
Yeah.
And that guy's been digging at it, And so I'm a little leery. I'm gonna call and talk to him and see what's,
Hey, you ugly rascal.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we can keep enough signal, Randy. You might have to call in.
Well, I'm standing by the window. I get over on my chair. I can't pick it up.
Wrap some tinfoil around your son and stretch a copper wire extension cord inside. Make him stand on the roof.
Put your tinfoil hat on.
I'd have to buy five rolls to go around his big ass.
Randy, do you want to? You want to try? You're real delayed. You want to try calling in on my phone, and let's do it that way. That way, we know we can get you. Yeah, we're gonna have to have him call in. Let me try calling him. Folks, we do apologize for this. This is what happens when you have a bunch of non-high-tech rednecks. I'll call you.
So what all platforms are you streaming across?
Right now?
Yep.
Just a second. Let me get Randy on.
Nate Rudd says,
"Oh yeah, that's my buddy from Washington, Idaho, and Washington.
Domino's Pizza."
And you there? Randy. Now, you know, we are going to have trouble with the cell phone services after what happened in Nashville today.
Yeah, I wonder why. You know, I heard a rumor of why they targeted that place, but I don't, and I won't spread rumors, but I mean, have you heard anything hard and concrete?
I'm going to be blunt. I'd rather not even discuss it.
All right.
I mean, with you.
I don't mind. We can discuss it in private.
Later. Yeah, we'll discuss it in private because with YouTube and everything going on, I don't want to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. Content.
Man, Randy's been hard to. You there, Randy?
Yeah.
It's hard to get. It's hard to get a signal down out of that castle he lives in.
Hey.
Hey.
I don't live in the city like y'all.
We got him. There we go, folks. We're all here.
I live in the middle of nowhere.
I'm about 10 miles north of a big city.
I wish I wasn't in the big city, but I'm kind of stuck here because of the wife's career. Folks, if I keep looking off to my sides, it's because I'm looking at the different monitors, making sure we're still streaming, and we are streaming. And still
I got my headphones on, and I can. Y'all aren't delaying it all now.
We are. Good.
I can hear me echoing, though.
Okay, let me give me just a second. Keep talking, Randy.
Hello.
Hello.
Too bad y'all don't get to see how pretty I am.
I know. I'm missing that right now. I mean, it's just...
Hey, you're missing that midget.
Hey, you're live now. Careful.
Hey, that's why I didn't go no further than that.
Are you still echoing?
Yes, I am.
Okay, just a second. Okay, try it again.
Hello, can you hear me? No echo.
Awesome. Can you hear us good?
Yes, I can.
Awesome. Pat, go ahead and say something, would you please?
Testing.
Oh, yeah. Okay, folks, here we go.
Patrick's real low. Yeah.
Try it now, Patrick.
Testing.
Yes, there you go. I kind of liked it better the other way, though.
Well, folks, here we go. Christmas Day. 2020. I wish this next week would hurry up and get over with so we can just close the door on this damn messed up year. We are in the process of trying to get this thing started, and I guess we got her. So how you guys doing, man?
I'm doing good.
I'm all right. A little stir crazy.
Yeah, you've been down, haven't you, Patrick?
I was down for 14 days with COVID.
Sick. Wow.
And just the last 36 hours, I'm actually okay. And my taste is coming back. You know, you lose your taste and your smell. And that drove me nuts, you know, last 6 days, but I've actually about 25% on my taste and smell coming back. So,
wow.
Hmm.
You know, I lost my, you know, grandson to COVID, and I lost my mother to COVID. And, I've got a good friend that was in the military with me. He was actually a decorated sniper. He's on incubation right now. How do you say it? Any incubation, any the breathing stuff.
Quarantine.
Oh, no, he's past quarantine.
He's intubated.
Intubated. Yeah, right now with COVID. I got a text this morning from his wife that he's finally just now starting to break the 70% mark on the breathing machine.
Yeah, of course, y'all heard. Didn't I tell y'all what happened to me with my smell and taste?
Uh-uh.
Probably 2 months ago, maybe a month ago, probably 2 months ago. I called my doctor just to find out when the next appointment was going to be. And I said, while I got you on here, I can't smell or taste. He said, or she said, get your behind up here tomorrow, first thing in the morning. So I go up there. We do blood tests and stuff. But while she was checking everything else, my ears and throat and all that stuff, I had two massive ear infections that didn't affect me not one bit other than I couldn't smell or taste. And they did the blood work and come back. I was negative. So
good.
Because I got, you know, congestive heart failure.
Yeah.
High blood pressure. I'd have been gone.
It, Randy, me, guys like me and you, it'd be better to just list what we don't have wrong with us.
No kidding.
Well, I'm going to tell you guys.
I don't have, and that's money.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Oh, my wallet's allergic to money, it seems. But I'm gonna tell you right now, COVID is, you know, I have, you know, friends in every arena of political thought and foreview, and I hear people just terrified about it. And I have guys, oh, it's just a flu. And I'm gonna tell you right now, I knew it was just a flu. It's three times worse than the flu, and it's not just a flu. It is way worse than that, actually. You know, it will hit you in a way with three different symptoms, and those will roll off of you, and then three more will come and hit you, and then those will roll off you, and three more will come and hit you, and it'll keep doing that until your body is built up enough resistance where it just kills it out. And it took me 13 days.
Wow. And
that's some bad, I'm talking 103.2 fever, you know, you could literally feel it sucking the oxygen out of your lungs. Huh. You know, it will do that for about 2 hours, and then it'll ease up for an hour or two and then go back worse. It's amazingly bad stuff.
I think I actually, believe it or not, I got real bad the first part of the year. And, you know, that was right before they started talking about COVID and all that. But
that's me too.
I mean, I was in and out of the hospital, and it just ripped me apart. And I wonder if I didn't have it back then, and they just didn't know it.
You could have, because there were people that actually have had that December 2019, and no one knew it was even here.
Yeah.
And now
there were symptoms like in January, the 1st of February. And I'm kind of like my old mom and dad. We kind of hard hit it. And I took a kind of like a home remedy. And dude, I'm telling you now, it was a cough, real bad cough. Mm-hmm. I couldn't shake the cough. I coughed for about a week. And then when I took this stuff that I take, gone in about 10 minutes. Mm. And I'm totally felt almost 100% better.
Well, what's concerning me is that they got a new mutated strain that has 26 mutations. It's 50 to 70% more contagious with 2 to 3 times the viral load of this strain.
Yeah.
And while they cannot confirm that it would be deadlier to humans, normally when there's with the viral load of that many times more prominent, the illness and all the symptoms are that much more prominent as well.
They're and just so trying to get rid of us old sick people.
And so and this could continue. There could be 3, 4, 10 strains of this that could be 100 times worse. You know, you just don't know what's coming. And I'm not selling fear. I'm just saying, you know, the research I did on the B117 strain right now is they're trying to confine it to southern London. But with 6 flights between southern London and JFK Airport a day, it's highly unlikely they've contained it.
Yeah. I hate to say it. I mean, it's all in God's hands now. I mean,
Don't hate to say that. That's a good thing.
Well, I mean, you know, most folks would be like, oh, there's, you know, something that we can do. We can't. I mean, the law of nature is when you get an overpopulation, things happen to subdue that population. And we are at that level now. And I don't know. I mean, if you wanted to sit here and look at it, and I'm not going to say too much more on the subject. We'll get on some brighter subjects. But there's too many things happening in place and that are stepping in place that was foretold way, way long time ago in the Bible. That and other, actually, even other cultures and religions that it's time, you know. And that's the reason me being Buddhist and studying the Christian
religion. And then all of a sudden we have the Star of Bethlehem showing up.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I'm just going to live out my time to the best of my abilities and move on to my next, no matter where it may be. You know, it's all we can do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
you just stay on my shirt tail, brother. You'll be all right.
So, Randy, you kind of missed part of it. Patrick was saying something about a fellow or you had a new research area you was talking about vesting or something.
Yes, a place in central Arkansas, a guy's land that he leases out. He feels very strongly that he has something there.
Say south central?
Somewhere in the central part of my tracking partner, Shorty, he's the one that's come up. You know, it's actually his friend. He's known this guy for a long time. I don't know the guy too well. And but he's supposed to be getting me some information, and we're going to put a waypoint on the property, confidentially, of course, and apply the criteria to that property to see, you know, the most likely the area that they're going to be hanging out, you know, their hide spots, their hunting areas, their travel ways, you know, and I'm going to do an armchair on it because, you know, I spend 2 or 3 weeks or better on an area on aerial maps and, you know, just from tracking these for so long, the criteria really overlays themselves, you know, and you find all the criteria overlaying itself on a map. That's where you start at, you know? And so, and that saves a lot of time of just sweeping back and forth on a piece of property looking for tracks. You know? So I'm going to look at doing an investigation there. Probably middle to end of January, most likely.
That's central Arkansas?
Central Arkansas is somewhere around there. Somewhere between Falcon and Little Rock's all I know. I mean,
you run it up in my country now over around Hot Springs and Salem and Glenwood and
Lake Jackson.
They're in there.
That's kind of, yeah. That's them foothills of the Ozark. I mean, Ouachitas.
Yeah.
That's a good area. While we're at it, Patrick, there's a feller watching us, Mr. Nate Rudd, the one that I was telling you out of Idaho, that I need to kind of hook you two up together. He's got a pretty hotbed up there, but they have got kind of some interesting wood knock theories. It's right down the alley with you. I've kind of told them a little bit about it, but they've a lot of the same patterns that you're getting. So that would confer that we know that they work in Oklahoma, which we found out the hard way, but they seem to be working up there too.
You know, out of all the states I've been in around me, in my geographic area, the only place I've come across where it's like they don't know what wood knocks are is in southeast Mississippi. You know, I was in there twice in the same area, and both times it's just kind of like, they're like, what's a wood knock? They'd rather yell at you. We had them come up going, whoop,
really?
You know, and then screaming and hollering. And then they would go to you'd almost think it's an owl at a distance. They'd go, whoop. You know, it's almost like an owl, but it's not. And they start that out way out there and coming in. But as far as a knock, I got two knocks and two trips, and they didn't even know how to do them. There's like, I don't know if they just weren't taught, if it's the area, but everywhere else I go, you know, it's pretty much a standard rule, you know, of what I've told you.
Yeah.
You know?
Randy, didn't you say something the other day on the phone with me that you was out squirrel hunting and had a knock at you or something?
Not with me, I don't guess.
Might have been Dad. I don't know. I mean, I've had so much stuff going on, I can't see myself coming or going anymore.
Yeah, I was doing an investigation in southern Arkansas. A couple landowners, and I was tracking for them. And we were out there at night. I didn't even have a light on me. It was just dark. And we're probably half a mile back here on a river. And you could hear one of them warning the one in my area that I was in there. And he would do a single knock, he would do a triple knock, and then a double knock. He's saying, I'm here. Danger warning, get out of the area. Come here, is what he was telling the one that was, and he kept repeating that. And I could hear him. He's, you know, 400, 500 yards off to the north. That'd been northwest of me. And I'm on a ridgeline listening to this one knock. And the one I'm investigating, he actually comes up about 60 yards out, grabs this big old bush that's growing along this wood line, and grabs that bush and shakes it and takes off. And, wow. and you could hear him run through the mud and hear his foot hit the mud, splash, and then get sucked out of the mud as he was leaving out.
Huh. Patrick, let me ask this. Hmm. So one knock is I'm here, three knocks is danger, and two knocks is come here.
One knock is in my area. This is the way it works in my area and the places I've been except Mississippi. A single knock is, hey, I'm here. And it translates just like that, because a single knock can become complex depending on the distance, the volume that it's being used in, and the context, and where your feet are compared to where its feet is.
Yeah.
Okay. That gets complex. It's almost, you almost got to be there and know it and be able to read it where your feet are. Because you can say hey in a lot of different ways. You can say it nicely, you can say it, you know, not nice. So, but a single knock is hey, I'm here. A double knock is I'm here and so should you be.
Yeah.
It's not like it's your it's not just an invitation, but it's an invitation to meet. You know. And the three knock warning, that is a very hard danger warning. Get out of this area. And that's to whoever.
The distance where you're from it.
Do what?
Does that one make a difference of how close you are to them?
They all do, because they use association.
Okay.
Okay. In a communication, if you've been communicating, I cannot open that box of worms yet.
I'll fix say that's like a two or three parts.
yeah. Okay. And a three knock is danger warning, get out of the area, and that is to whom it concerns. That is everybody in earshot, anybody that's in this area. That's human. That's Sasquatch. That's everybody needs to get the hell out of the area. It's danger warning. You know,
I'm asking for the people who might be listening and stuff.
Well, when you start talking about distance, you know, you're not going to walk right up on someone's face and yell at them and say, hey, you're not going to do that. You know, now I know from experience that I can hear one of their knocks at 1.08 miles. Okay, 1.08 miles, I can hear the knock. And it sounds like a click. It's just kind of a click at that distance. And it will stay the same. It always stayed the same, just a nice monotone, just a medium knock. But when it got within 80 yards, it would tone it down to, and it would go back to just a click because that's how soft they were using it. And to me, it's a sign of a respectful conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Now I do know a young lady, and there's actually a video of this. They're talking, and you hear, I'm talking 50 yards out, this huge crack. I mean, it is a huge wood knock. And that, in that context, and especially them being in the woods, in their woods, you know, it's not like they were working from an improved area like I do. I work from an improved area, you know, somewhere where they know they're going to walk in and there could be a human there, so I don't surprise them. Yeah. If you go in their woods, you're being intrusive. Okay, you know, and that's another thing I'll have to get into. But when you're talking about the knocks, you know, that young lady got a big, loud crack at, you know, 50 yards. And she didn't just get one. She got two. One, and then about a minute or two later, another. And in that context, that single knock was saying, hey, I'm here.
Yeah.
This area is already occupied. Your presence is not needed. That's what they're saying with that volume. Now, in my area, I've had them use that loud volume with me. There was an issue, a safety concern. I was a little close in, and I got a 3-knock, 6-knock, 3-knock, and it sounded like someone was shooting a 30-06 at 80 yards from me. I mean, it was just that loud wood banging, pow, 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 then 6 knocks and then another 3 knocks. And that was a very in-your-face warning, get out of here, you're not wanted here, get out of here now.
Oh, yeah.
And we did. And I actually had a guy from a show I was tracking for there witness this and got it on audio recording. And so we leave there and we go back, and I'm going to talk about the association here. We're sitting in our camp, and they know where humans sleep. You know, they know people go here and sleep. So they, and then this, and I've known this group for several years. They know my truck. They hunt me down inside this campground at 1 a.m. and you get two loud in your face invitation knocks. Pow, pow. And I'm talking 40 yards outside of camp. Now, he wasn't saying, I'm in your face. He's saying, I'm the same person that warned you out of the area earlier this afternoon. You're going to associate the volume of that with the volume of this, and this is an invitation. And then he went about 80 yards out, which would made it a little further, you know, 100, 115 yards out there. He did two more very loud knocks. And then he came back and he did a whoop. And then he left my campsite. And so, you know, association can also, and you got to be able to read that in the situation. You know? So it gets complex. You know, you can't, it's, there's never, never, and there's never and always. You got to read it like a book, you know, when it comes to knocks.
It takes many years.
Well, and, you know, the one factor that we're not taking into effect here, you know, I'm pretty sure, and Patrick, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but there's probably a little bit of variances, you know, in from like troop to troop and area to area, but
personality to personality.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are. That's why I was talking about in my geographical area.
Yeah.
In other geographical areas, it can be completely different or it can be completely the same. You know, I know the knocks in southern Arkansas were the same as the knocks in in northern Louisiana, which were the same as the knocks in central Louisiana, but Mississippi completely different. You know, they'd rather yell at you, which is weird to me because it took me years to get any kind of vocalization out of my group.
Yeah. You know,
they're probably Italian.
You're talking about them yelling at you. You know, Sutton, it's like Eden down there where we're at, not at my personal research area, but down in southeastern Oklahoma. It's like on one side of the area that we was researching, they was doing more vocals, you know, yells and hoops and stuff like that. And then it was like straight across the river, you know, 300-400 yards away, it was more like clicks and wood knocks.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. I'm also, you know, I've heard down around Louisiana, way south Louisiana, which would have been down there closer to you. You was talking about in that part of Mississippi that they was a lot more vocal and actually a lot more aggressive too. But they wouldn't do as much wood knocks as they was screaming and yelling. It almost, you know, I have to wonder if that part of Mississippi, was there a lot of hardwoods there or was it more conifers?
It was a good mix.
Really?
There was a lot of timber land, had a lot of conifers on it, but there was a lot of bottoms too. They had a lot of hardwoods.
Okay, and, so the factor of it just being needing hardwoods to do the wood.
I wonder if it's how the sound kind of goes,
you well, know, that's,
in the air.
That's why I say they don't know how to do knocks, because that last one, the one that came up, he hit the tree hard, but it was a pine tree is probably 4 foot through, big bull pine. And it didn't.
We don't know how the jet streams are down there either.
You know, it was just a dull thud, you know. But,
you know, I've always wondered, I'm sure they run through the woods carrying sticks with them all the time. I've always wondered if maybe some of that wood knocking and stuff couldn't be their hands. Because I've seen videos of chimpanzees slapping a tree, and it sounds, or hitting it with their knuckles, you know, and it sounds pretty loud.
Or cupping their hands and clapping.
Yeah, or even a chest slap or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've heard the chest beating twice actually, and I've heard one cup a hand and do that on a tree. But there's also times that there's no way it could have been a hand. It almost sounded like it might have had a piece of cow bone, hard cow bone or something.
Yeah, like an antler or something.
You know, something massive with a big ball and hard that could be hit. And, I mean, sound like it's going to knock a tree down, you know, so hard. So, and, you know, and all of us, I'm sure all of us can look back and think about a time you've been in the woods that you heard something out there 100 yards or so going click.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Well, it's just, usually you're talking about that. It's just like, yeah, you know, dad, you know, telling y'all where, you know, we'd be out building fence or something and I'd think it was him, you know, I'd be pounding steeples in a daggum wooden post, and then I'd quit and hear another one, but it was like dad's over here and this is over here. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. What in the world, you know, but 12, 13 years old out there doing it. And it's like, yeah. Is it, ooh, you know, you never think about it until you learn, you know, as we got older and learned that the target species does it all the time. I don't know how many times Randy, how many times you've been fishing and heard something sound like a rock bouncing off a tree or something out in the woods.
Or rocks hitting rocks, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I remember 12 years old, and I didn't know I had this experience until after my first experience, my first recognized experience. I looked back at 12 years old, sitting in a swamp on the backside of a lake, you know, December squirrel hunting, and hearing three knocks, and it just pow, pow, pow. And then a few minutes go by, pow, pow, pow. You know, and I really attributed it to someone trying, you know, building a deer stand 100 yards away from me.
Yeah.
You know, across the swamp on top of a hill. but it wasn't.
Well, that too was back as old as we are. We built wooden deer stands.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah,
we didn't have climbing stands and all that other stuff back then.
Yeah. But you're talking 4 miles down a sandy road, and you know, it was Dad and I, and there wasn't no one else back there, no way to get back there except through the down that sandy road. And this was right on top of me. And of course I'm a kid. I didn't know anything until now after I had that encounter with Sasha and she ran off doing those three knocks. That knock, 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 knock. She ran through that brush knocking all the way out of hearing before all the festivities kicked off. Yeah, you know, that's when I put the after that encounter is when I put together, holy smokes, I had one knocking at me way back when. I was by myself. Dad was 2 miles away hunting. I was by myself in a swamp with a single shot H&R 12 gauge, you know, with squirrel shot.
Mm-hmm.
He might as well have had a slingshot with a rock in it.
That or a Daisy BB gun.
Yeah. But it's amazing. The retrospect is amazing. And I the question in the back of my head and back of my mind is how many people has had that happen? They don't even know.
Yeah.
And don't think about it. So yeah. Because we didn't think about it until later on in life.
Yeah. It wasn't until I witnessed one do it that I knew what it was. And actually, I didn't know at the time, but after she chased me for a mile, yeah, I kind of figured it out. But
yeah,
I had one calling out danger warning. Yeah, the area, there's a 12-year-old kid in here with a single shot shotgun squirrel hunting. That would have been 1985.
You know, you sitting there thinking about it, you start remembering back. I don't know how many times I went to the deer stand well before, you know, daylight. You know,
yeah.
Thinking about things, and you swear you hear something walking underneath your stand. I mean, once you've been around enough, you know that an armadillo in the leaves scent can make a lot of noise, but they sound different than somebody walking.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times I've, you know, get out of the stand and ask Dad, because he'd usually be, you know, on the other side of the woods. Did you come over by my stand? No. He goes, I thought you came over by mine, you know, and it's not. He was like, probably something sniffing out or probably didn't want to see it in daylight, because it literally would walk up underneath the stand. It'd be dark as could be. And then it'd turn around and walk off. And it's like, you know, it almost wonder because we know they're in there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just in retrospect, it really, that's part of what screwed my head up so bad for 2 years, was that in retrospect, my entire life, I was
you're telling off on yourself.
What?
That's your head.
Oh, well, in retrospect, it freaked me out. I'm not going to lie. I had nightmares for 2 years after the first encounter. Yeah. It was a devastating blow to me because I was taught that I was the biggest, baddest thing in the woods, that I had to be responsible and respectful and careful of my actions because, you know, I was the apex predator with the weapons and the brains. And then I find out that that's not the case. And that, you know, I used to be able to go out in the woods in the dark, go to sleep by a tree, wake up the next day and, you know, go shoot a squirrel. And I can't, you know how hard it is for me to do now? To go out and throw a bedroll on the ground, go to sleep, especially being aware.
Yeah.
When you're aware, you know, I do a thing when I'm tracking and when I'm hunting too, but I get in touch with my surroundings very well. And it's hard to turn off. You know, when you lay down and go to sleep and you can feel as far as your ears can hear, you can feel the hum of the woods, and you hear it coming in, and you're laying in the dark, and it's coming in. It walks up to within 40 yards of you, and you're standing there behind a tree, and you know it's there, and four of your other guys with you don't,
because you feel the ripple. How,
yeah, you know how you know what that does to your head. You know, knowing what's there. You know. And then you keep thinking, I'm in this bedroll and I am the soft taco of the natural world, you know,
especially after seeing what's out there, you know, that's one of the biggest, you know,
I got to experience.
Yeah, it's definitely, but you know, the biggest thing that always got me is, and I get it now, and I'm not going to mention any names, but over the last few years of doing a lot of this, you know, I mentioned that silence of the woods, you know, when everything goes quiet, even the crickets. And I've had a lot of people, I've been out in the woods my whole life, and that's never happened to me. And I said, well, you haven't been out in the woods a whole lot then.
Because, yeah, I've heard it.
Yeah, and that's I know you have, Randy.
Or actually never heard it.
But, you know, yeah. It definitely makes a – and anything can make it. I mean, I don't know how many times, Randy, you can vouch for this. How many times, you too, Pat, be out, you know, squirrel hunting. And, you know, when you make that shot and drop that squirrel, you might as well sit down and wait for 45 minutes because it's going to take that long for the squirrels to come back out, you know.
Yeah, I can bring them back out in about 10 minutes.
What are you doing, calling them?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. See, I never had the heart to call them. I just...
come here so I can kill you.
Deer, you know, I've never called deer. I've just never done it. You know, I know it can be done. I've seen it done. Now I've used
my fat ass had to eat though.
Well, true. That's a big difference there. But yeah, that hum, man. I mean, my deal. People laugh at me like when we go camping. If I'm researching, I literally either pack my sleeping bag and stuff up and sleep like 20 yards from my wife in the camp, or I put my recorders out and I listen to headphones through the recorders. And she'll tell you, she says, I take her into the woods to call the Sasquatch in cause she snores, but it's so hard for me to go to sleep at night. I go to sleep after the witching hour. Everybody says I go from sleep from like 6 to 10 in the morning. And I always have somebody up watching because it's hard, like you said, Patrick. After you've seen one of these and you know they're out there, and the more you learn at what they're capable of, the more unsettling it becomes. I tell people all the time, the more I've learned, the scareder I am.
Oh, yeah. I understand exactly where you're at. It has taken to just this year where I can kind of make my peace a little bit with they're there and I'm there. just not a whole bunch, but just enough to where I'm not a nervous wreck when they're around. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the first time that I went back out in the woods by myself, I ended up calling you at what, 11 o'clock at night because of some, excuse my language, the SOBs was messing with me. You know, and it was not my imagination because we got the audio recordings to prove it, you know, and it just.
Oh, yeah. You got one out there yelling at you. I heard the audio.
Yeah.
Oh, he wasn't happy.
No, he wasn't. I played that for another individual. I'm not going to say his name until we get the interview locked in. But he had a sighting at 9 years old and seen one at like 20 yards and it screamed. And when I played that, we was talking on the phone, dad was listening in on it. He got real quiet and you could tell the emotion in his voice. He goes, that's exactly what it sounded like. So that gave me, what's the word, verification that it is the target species. When I had somebody that physically was able to see it happen. And he said it sounded just like that. And that would be conducive if he's 20 yards from something and it turns and looks at him and screams like that goes right there. Well, like you said, they're not happy. That thing wasn't happy for him being there.
Yeah. I've been yelled at pretty close, but not 20 yards. I'm not sure if I could contain myself.
I couldn't contain myself when I seen one. I sure wasn't able to.
Well, I'm a little better now. I mean, I've walked into the woods. I've tracked them right up behind their heels, you know, in the dark. And I do a little better now. But if that son gun would have turned around and yelled at me at 6 feet,
I'd have curled.
I don't know. Yeah. Everybody, they just better be able to run. That's all. That's all I can say, you know.
That's, you know, it's like me and Randy talk about all the time. And, you know, we joke around about it, but there's a hint of truth, Randy. You know, we can't run. So we might as well just curl up in a ball and shit ourselves.
That's what I'm saying. I ain't worried about it. Hey,
I'm
get me.
I'm squatching with you guys.
You ain't got to outrun the squatch.
That's why you go bear hunting with somebody like us.
Yeah, because we and I can't climb no tree either.
Yeah.
So. No, all joking aside.
But I am.
I've never.
This next year, mm-hmm. I am going to be paying to get this other knee fixed. So
yeah,
y'all better look out. I might be able to run again.
Well, all joking aside, I try to be the first one in and the last one out. You know, we all getting out, or we going down fighting one or the other. But it's kind of like just not too long ago. When was that? November. The week before Thanksgiving. I'm camped out on an area, and I heard it coming around. I mean, in broad daylight, it comes around. It's back in the brush. I hear it pushing through the brush, and then when it gets dark, it comes up and starts calling to the dog that we got in camp. And I sit there and listen to this thing do mimics. It started off as like a terrier going, and then it said, whoa, whoa. And then it said, whoa. You know, and I'm listening to this thing try to do mimics, and it's trying to set the dog off in camp. Well, the dog ain't buying it. The dog knows that's not a dog. He's not barking at it, you know. And then it goes stomping down back to behind camp where it did it during daylight hours too. And then the dog lit up. Dog's growling, barking, you know. But, yeah, that one actually walked into camp when the fire was dead. It walked into camp, was actually between one of our guys and the fire, and I'm on the other side of the fire by about 15 yards. And it's unsettling. You know, it's an unsettling feeling going to sleep and knowing one's there.
I got a question for you, Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
This is a different subject. How's that gun coming along that I sold you?
It is still sitting there waiting on me to tackle it. I haven't.
You had 14 days of quarantine. You could have been playing with that thing.
I wasn't quarantined. I was laying on the couch sick of the dog.
Oh, okay.
You know.
You had 100 and something fever.
103.2.
Dang.
And I hovered at 101 for about 4 or 5 days. But the worst one was 103, over 103. But I have designs on it. I know exactly what I want to do to it. Yeah. But I've been working. I've either been working or sick or both.
I can't wait to see it.
Speaking of guns, I just friend brought over a model 1894 12 gauge pump hammered.
94 or 97?
1897, my bad.
Yeah.
Ringerton, 16 gauge. I've got to do some. He wants it totally restored with patina, original patina. So I've got to do a little bit of match bluing, and some of the furniture's cracked on it. I think I'm going to be able to lace in the fore end grip. If I can get up here to the camera, the fore end grip's cracked. So on the back side, I'm going to kind of gauge it down a little bit and lace in fiberglass on the back side to make the front side look all original.
Well, I just did one. I got one. I just completely rebuilt, restored.
One of those hammers like that?
Yeah.
They're nice guns. I've never seen one.
And
a hammered pump.
You know, it depends on if he just wants to go back with new with old wood, or because you can get the new wood.
Oh, you can?
Yeah. Boyd's stock makes. Now, it depends on how much money you want to spend. You can go to Macon's. Macon's makes the four end in stock, and it's a it's a $600 or $700 piece of wood, but it looks like a rich man's toy when you're done.
You know, might be an idea. I'm a big matter of fact, Boyd's, we work with Boyd's a lot on our competition guns. Mm-hmm. I might just take the original furniture off of it and let him keep it and then put new furniture on it because he wants to shoot it some too. But the stock and stuff's in good shape.
The stock is in good shape.
Yeah. It's just that four end grip's got a, you know, the slide.
The four end is $39.
I don't know if I could fix it for that cheap.
I'm just saying, you know, you get on.
How much did you say?
The four end for an 1897 Winchester pump 12 pump shotgun is $39.
Oh yeah, you can't build it for that.
No, I can't. I don't even think I could fix it for that. Like you're saying.
Now I'm gonna tell you what I did. I ordered a new stock for mine, but I didn't particularly care for it. You got to pay more money. You know, they got the basic grade and you got the best grade. You know, you got to pay more money for the better grades. Yeah. And my original was actually a better grade than what I bought. So I went ahead and used my old one. And it turned out pretty nice. I mean, not bad. Just a second. I'll go get it.
Yeah, I was just sitting there thinking about getting this one too.
Well, I can't see nothing. So, hey, does those older model guns like they use walnut?
Yeah, this one's definitely walnut on it.
Yeah, that's good hardwood.
Yeah, it's a real nice gun. If it was a 12 gauge, I would have actually tried to buy it off of him, but it's a 16 gauge. Which I know yours is a 16, isn't it? Or is yours an 18?
Mine?
Yeah.
No, it's a 20 gauge.
20, okay.
It's a model 17 Remington.
Yeah.
Man, that's made 1915.
That's a squirrel killing rascal right there, that 20 gauge.
Shit, ain't no telling how many squirrels I'll kill with that thing. I've been shooting it since I was 7 years old. It's like an extension of my arm. I was out there shooting a single shot, you know, before deer season started.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it, but some of them guns, the newer models than the one that I use all the time, if you put the bead on the squirrel, you're shooting above the squirrel.
Really?
Really. And the guy that reloads my ammo for me, he told me. And so I started shooting below it, and I started killing squirrel without having to shoot two or three times at him.
I got you.
I go back to Betsy, and Betsy, hey, it doesn't matter. I pointed at it, it's dead.
Now you're going to make me go in there and get this one, ain't I? Ain't you? I'll be right back.
Is it browned or is it blued?
You know,
they came both brown and blue.
I think it's brown.
And you've already got yours restored, Patrick?
Yeah, my Winchester 12 gauge 97 Winchester is restored. I bought it for my dad. My dad, it's all he had. All he had was, my father had a 303 British Enfield, and he had a 12-gauge 97 Winchester pump. That's the only guns he ever had that I knew of. And both of them were stolen. And so when I got old enough to get a job, I bought him a new rifle, and I bought him two 1897 Winchester 12-gauge pumps to replace the one that was stolen.
I can't hear you.
Can't hear you.
And so my dad passed in 2009, and I got the shotguns back. And so one of my bucket list things was to restore it for his grandson, my son, who loves the weapon, you know.
See the
here? Yeah, I see it. A solid gun.
Yeah, it's good shooting. I shot it. And it is walnut furniture.
Yeah.
It's a solid gun. I mean, what's wrong with it?
That's what I was going to show you. You probably can't see it in the camera, but it's got a crack right through here.
Yeah.
There it is. See it?
Yeah. Well, that piece is $39 at Boyd's.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm
that's where I'd go.
Yeah, I mean, it's not worth me taking a chance of messing up this original furniture. If he can keep the original furniture and then put new furniture on it, I mean, it's still going to be, he'll have the original. It'll be worth as much.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you what.
It's brown.
I'm going to tell you what. I had to Google up a video on how to take that fore end off. It is that complicated.
I bet.
Yeah, I was looking at
that. I'm echoing again.
Because you got to take it all apart, and you got this spanner, this little spanner nut. It's got to line up just right, and then you got some other inner workings that you got to basically just got to man up and yank it off, you know. But you're kind of scared to do that, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
That's old gun.
Yeah.
Winchester model 1897, 16-gauge.
That's a pretty rare weapon, actually, for 16 gauge. Most of them are 12.
Manufacturing date on this one is 1900.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why they're so good.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, it's go ahead.
It is probably a modified choke.
No, it's straight all the way through.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the first thing I was looking to see.
Now, to me, that's even better.
Well, will a dime fit down the choke?
Well, yeah, this one's smooth. It's not choked down at all.
It's open bore.
Open bore, yeah.
Because mine's a full choke.
Oh, yours cranks down?
Yeah, mine's a full choke, 30-inch barrel. Most of your open bores were, those were police issue.
That's awful long barrel for a police issue. That's a 27-inch or 30-inch barrel on it.
Yeah.
1900.
Yeah, true. They had a whole different philosophy back then.
So back on how many unexplained sounds have you heard in the woods that you could attribute to a wood knock?
Over my whole life?
Mm-hmm.
There's no telling, really. I mean, because as you're younger, you think like Gary said, that's just somebody hammering on wood or something out there.
But, I mean, you've heard something like that?
Oh, yeah. Yep. And some weird howls before, too.
You know, I was just recently watching a video about Millican fishing. This guy has a YouTube channel. He does a lot of fishing.
Yeah.
And he did a overnight survival challenge somewhere up north. And he packed in, he was backpacking, and he packed in some trout gear, and he was fishing, catching fish, cooking over fire, and he spent the night out there. And he didn't have any lights set out. I mean, he's just out there in the dark. And he woke up that morning, and he says, "My God, there were some weird noises out here. Things stomping around, and just I've never heard noises like that."
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I wonder what that could have been. You know,
that's how many hunters always say, "Oh, I've been hunting all my life, and I ain't never heard or seen nothing."
Yeah,
they didn't know what they were listening at.
Very good point, Randy. Very good point.
Well, it goes with this guy that I actually work with. He's big into the Jeep trail riding, and he loves his Jeep. They get together with, you know, other couples, and they go ride up in Arkansas. And his buddy knew of this place that no one can get to except for mule or some really bad, wicked Jeep. And no one's been there in like 10 years. And so they load up and they take off. This guy's telling me about, boy, I'm so excited about going jeeping, you know. When he comes back and he tells me the story, he says, you know, we get up there on this trail, and I mean, it's bad. It's a bad trail. We're like rock crawling to get back to this camp spot no one's been to. And we get back there, and I can't sleep a wink. He said, oh, we set up camp, great time. He says, I'm laying there in my tent, and as soon as the sun goes down and gets dark, something is walking around camp. And he said, and it never dawned on him. You know, he said, I had to open, unzip my door and was laying in front of the door, and it would start walking, just slowly walking in the brush, just inside the brush. And he, as soon as he'd pick his head up, it would stop. And he'd lay back down, and it would slowly start walking in. He'd try to catch it. He shined a light. And he said it did that for two nights. He said, as most miserable nights I ever had, I couldn't sleep. Something was walking around camp, you know. And he says, I don't know what it was. I said, it was a Bigfoot. He laughed. He laughed at me. He said, those aren't real.
But yeah, you know, real good point though. You know, a lot of I've had a lot of conversations with folks, you know, and they, well, I've been hunting all my life, like Randy said, and I've never heard or seen nothing like that. And it's like, well, what have you seen? And then you start explaining to them, and they almost come full circle. Some of them have. It's like, well, you know, you might be right, because they don't. And that's what my dad, you know, tells a lot of folks about himself. He didn't know it either until I started learning from you, you know, guys like you guys, and teaching him, that he's realized, holy crap. And now that he's, it's so funny, the more you learn, the more you find, you know, you start, start seeing their sign and stuff. But then I turn around, and the more I learn, the more I find out that I don't know about these things, because they're always one upping us. Mm-hmm. I don't care who you are, what you are, they one up you every time.
Yeah.
And not only the knocks and other howls and stuff like that, that smell, that's what got me to looking into this stuff.
See, I've never
had. Because I've heard somebody else tell, or heard somebody else mention a smell. And I said, wait a second, I smelled something like it. Now, smell is different than a knock, because you ain't going to get that smell.
Of course.
Now, that wood knocks, you just. It's just other humans out there knocking, or maybe a house that echoed through the woods or something.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of,
it's easier to just not even think about a wood knock being something else than it is that stinking smell that you smell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I completely agree with you there, Randy. And a lot of people have a lot of theories on what the smell is, what they use it for, how it comes about. And I'd say, you know, the only time I ever smelt one is when it was really moving. You know, it was warm. It was moving. It was, you know, it was in the 80s. And that's the only time I ever actually smelt one. And I don't know if it was because of the sweat glands, you know. Yeah. Now, the only reason it smelled, the only reason I, go ahead.
Me, is 15 or 20 deer was running right through the middle of my 10 oak flat where I.
We're losing you, Randy.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I can hear me echoing. But what I'm saying is it was pushing them deer to the lake. And I think the smell was having something to do with it, because there wasn't no wood knocking, wasn't no howling, wasn't nothing else. It's just they come out of nowhere, went right through the dang 10 oak flat, and then I smelt the smell.
Mm-hmm.
That's why as a kid, I thought, well, man, them deer stunk. And then later on, I found out that the smell of the doe and estrus and all that didn't smell nothing like what I smelled.
Mm-hmm.
See, I've never had that smell. I've smelled dead animals and everything else, but I've never had what people describe as the Sasquatch, you know.
Well, the glands on the deer, when you're cleaning it and you get the glands out.
Oh,
well,
I've had that smell. Yeah.
Well, see, and that smell ain't even close to that, what I smell.
Yeah. I really want to, one day maybe I'll be able to do it, pick up a bunch of trap lures and go through and work out a combination of them that is the Squatch smell and use it. You know,
I'll be up on the hill about 400 yards distance with my scope to 338 watching your back.
I'm serious.
She probably shoot better than you.
Well, somewhat, yeah. Competition, yeah, but under pressure, no. But yeah,
especially she's good. That far,
yeah, she's good.
I want tandem shooting, okay.
we want a full Black Ops Navy SEAL with A-10 Warthog backup.
Chris Kyle.
Yeah.
Well, thing is, you know, the only time I smelt them was when they were hot and running or moving. And the only time I actually smelled is because my back trail that he was on forced him upwind from me. And that's how I smelt him. Because, I mean, he was literally right there. I mean, it hit me in the face, and it was just an unmistakable musky. I've heard a lot of descriptions of it, but I actually haven't smelled anything rotten. It was a very clean smell, but it was a very musky musk body odor type smell. And I would love to be able to recreate that.
You know, I've heard some people talk about the here in Oklahoma, a real sulfury smell with them. And I think I actually figured that one out. Being in oil field, we get a lot of folks that talk about them being around oil field equipment. We know old hogs will get up underneath the BOPs and the derricks and the tanks and rub up against to get that lice and stuff off their body, and that'll give them a real sulfury smell. I wonder if the squatches are doing the same.
Well, old Chris Oak poles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, in Mississippi, I actually tracked a 19-inch track up to a set of holding tanks, crude holding tanks, and it was hiding in between the tanks.
Yeah.
Because it was dry. There's just dry everywhere, except there's this the dike around it was actually retaining water, and the pigs were coming wallowing right there.
Yeah.
And it went and hid in between the tanks. It was ambushing them out from those tanks and grabbing pigs.
I have pushed for the last two or three years, especially in Oklahoma and Northeast Texas, down around where you're at, Randy, and y'all are the first guys that really acknowledged it with me, but I don't know how many times I'd be tracking these things and they'd be following up on pigs. I think pigs is one of their main prey. Because
would it not?
A pig's actually easier to get a hold of than a deer.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I'll tell you,
as fast as they can.
Yeah. Also, I learned from personal experience, they love roasted pig. They do.
I believe it.
Nothing on it. Nothing on it. Just over fire, roasted, primitive style. And they love that.
I've heard a lot of reports of them, you know, coming in when they smell the bacon, you know, bacon cooking or something like that. But what was what was y'all cooking that last time you was down there on the primitive deal? Was that a deer or was it a goat or pig?
That was a wild hog.
Wild hog. Yeah.
I was sleeping 12 foot from the remnants of a wild hog laying on a piece of wood that night. And I'm banned from talking about it in this group, you know, so I couldn't tell them, hey guys, you need to do something with this. You know, it's going to pull something in. I couldn't do that. You know, I just had to lay there and deal with it.
Well, yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? Get up and run out? I mean, go after them. they're just on a fade. You know, that's another thing too. You know, and I'm just saying, you know, I hear a lot of folks say, I'm just going to jump up and run after them. Okay, you're not going to see nothing. They're going to fade away. You just lay there and be still and listen to them, you know, or have them come on in.
Well, I didn't want an experience there. I was really just trying to – I wasn't squatching. I was teaching tracking classes and primitive survival classes, primitive shelters for, you know, a new guy that got in, and also some Cubs Boy Scouts that came through. But, you know, I didn't want anything to happen there. It's just I know they're there, and they know I know I'm there because I fed one of them a set of ribs, you know.
Yeah.
But a few years ago. But they know I know, and it's and when you change, that's another thing. That's something I got to talk to this other guy about that wants to do an investigation on his property. Once they know you know, it all changes.
Yeah.
You know, you can not know, and this is what I actually feel comfortable doing. I'll walk into an area I've never been in before, act like I don't know nothing, and hunt and fish and do all the things I want to do, and they know I don't know, or they believe I don't know.
Yeah.
And even if I hear something, I keep my mouth shut, I just act like a dummy. And I'm safe that way. But when you go into an area and they find out you know, there's no reason to hide. They're going to come up and yell.
Pressure here.
Yeah, they're going to come up and yell and do wood knocks and freak you out.
Why do you say that, Randy?
Because, like I said in the last couple of times we've talked, pattern the humans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But on what both
if you do what you do every day as a farmer or whatever, and then you know that they're there, and then you change it up, they're going to know something's up.
Mm-hmm.
But on what both of y'all said, even like in our research area, you know, when over the years, you know, Dad just acts like they're not there, you know, for years they have. And then I come along the last few years and I start doing research, pushing back in there. You know, we never have done the hoops or the wood knocks or nothing like that. But I believe that this last couple of times I'm down there, they know that I know they're there. It's the reason they're getting more blatant about being silly, mm-hmm. you know. And I'm not saying that they're being mean or aggressive or nothing like that. But I'm sorry when I'm trying to sleep and they keep coming up to the side of the RV and making noise and
they just want to acknowledge that you know they're there.
Yeah, they sure got an acknowledgement. Me calling Patrick going, what do we do to get them out of here? Or I'm driving home.
Drive well,
they want to intimidate you. You know, they don't want you. You know, their greatest concern is their own survival and what your presence means to that.
Yeah.
Now, if you're in an improved area, your area, you know, you cannot let them push you around. You've got to push back. Now, if you're in their area, if I'm in their area, they come and tell me to get out, I'm gone. You know, I'll go back to my area. But if they come to my area and go to pushing, I will push back up and including gunfire if I have to.
Yeah.
Well, there's going to be some lead flying.
If it comes to that, yeah. I mean, yeah.
If it's in my area, they're going to be some lead from me.
Well, and I think that we proved that, you know, in most cases, you don't have to shoot, you know, like in our situation down there. That's been, what, a month and a half?
Mm-hmm.
And I went out and we did what we did, you know, with – I'm not going to say exactly what we do because I'm not going to put our – what's the word I'm looking for? Liabilities on somebody else going out and doing it, and it might get an adverse effect, but we went out and did what we did, and they've vacated the area. They haven't had anything, and a lot of it might be due to them pushing out that timber on the north side of the place, but Dad hasn't had nothing happen in the last few weeks. Excuse me.
Yeah.
True. Very good point. They do seem to be seasonal down there.
Well, I never, ever, ever wanted to know that they are real.
Well, yeah,
this was not something that I wanted to know about. It's just that when you keep running into it and you keep having issue, you better learn about it, you know, or get hurt. So, yeah, you know, I'm not a huge fan of them. It's just that I got to know what triggers them, what doesn't trigger them, how they move through areas, how they're using areas, so I can try to avoid being in the areas that and competing for the same resources at the same time, and respect them enough to they have their area and they do what they need to do, and then I can have my own area doing what I'm doing without stepping on their toes, you know, and work with them. You know,
I think you said something very prolific for me is maybe if I'd raise my mic up, people could see me through the, I could be looking at the camera, but I think something that you said that's real prolific for me, you know, if I could wind the clock back to when I had my sighting, and even before then, you know, I did a lot of research and stuff, but it wasn't a physical emotional tie, if you understand what I'm saying. But when I came out of eye with one, everything changed. It flat out. And if I could go back and not know about these things, I think that my quality of life in the woods would be a lot more peaceful and a lot nicer. I'd probably spend more time in the woods than I do now. But now I can't go in the woods without my freaking head on a swivel. I don't feel comfortable. Just like when you see my video or I'm down there at my pond, I call it my pond. It's where I learned how to fish. You know, this is my area. Well, no, it's not. That was my sanctuary. Well, no, it's not. There's other things down there. I wish I could go back, and cause I've lost a lot of sleep and had a lot of freaking nightmares, folks. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish I could go back and unwind what's the word I'm looking for? What they do on the, Men in Black, where they shot that. Right? I wish I could do that, man. Be like the guy from The Matrix. I just want to get plugged back in. Well, I want to be unplugged.
Yeah, I understand. And I'm going to tell you, the more I learned about the capabilities early on in the studies, you know, knowing they can do 40 plus miles an hour, knowing that they can see you in the dark at 400 yards on a moonless night, in a rainstorm and pick you out, no problem. Their strengths, how brazen they are. And not just that, but also in tracking and finding how many are actually out there and working up a rough number of, you know, how many per square mile there are, you know, it changes your life.
And, oh yeah.
The only way I actually made my peace with it is looking back on all those same terrifying situations I've been in and saying, well, guess what? I lived through every one of them.
Yeah.
You know, that same
abilities.
Yeah. It wasn't because of me that I got out alive.
That's right.
You know, it's because they chose to be intimidating, but not deadly. You know, and that made a big difference on my mindset. You know, this past primitive camp that I slept at, and that one was imitating a dog and came stomping behind camp. That next morning, I got up to go do tracking. So I'm walking back to the area where I heard him stomping at, and I get, you know, 15 yards off that corridor that they were using, and I hear this low growl come in, this and it's right behind, there's a pine tree and then a pine tree behind that. He's behind that second pine tree, watching me the whole time. And I thought about it, but I'm already here. And so, I'm just 15 yards. And so, here's the thing, I'm trusting him to be intimidating, but not deadly.
Yeah.
So I step onto the corridor. He goes out a little bit further, and there's a big, loud single knock in your face. I'm here. Your presence is not needed here. And he does that. And so I just snapped three pictures. You know, I pushed him. I pushed him when he was trying to intimidate me. I pushed him.
Yeah.
And he chose to back up and be intimidating, not deadly. And so I already pushed him, and I'm on his corridor snapping pictures and got a picture of his track and where he knocked down limbs. And so I said, okay. And I backed up and I respected him then. And I went back to where I was at, terrified, absolutely terrified. I could feel the muscles in my body quivering from terror, but I trusted him and it paid out. You know, it paid off. So, and that helps a little bit in knowing that I could, you know, the safety aspect of things is not as bad as what I thought it was.
Yeah. Well, in that situation, you know, I want to say this, and I want to get on something about both of y'all. I want to ask you a question on your opinion, but knowing that they choose that, but thinking of all the times, you know, when you do the research like I do about the missing 411K and stuff, and knowing their capabilities, how many times somebody just ends up disappearing. You know, they talk about in these missing 411 cases of person being 10 yards behind you on a trail and you turn around and they're gone, you know, or they're gone 3 minutes, or they go 30 yards and they're gone with no sign. Very easily, one of these guys could walk up, snap their neck, grab them, throw them over the shoulder and be gone at 30, 40 mile an hour. Mm-hmm. What perfection of that is, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole, Nephilim and spiritual conspiracies and all that. We're just going to tonight discuss their capabilities. But in saying that, how many times have we been in the woods that one of these has been 10 or 12 feet from us, Randy, sitting underneath a squirrel tree, and we don't even know it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about that and think about their demeanor. Why are they this way? Well, I think it's because they know that we as people, is if one of us goes missing, here comes 200 or 300 people with dogs and guns and lights for 3 or 4 days. I think they have an intelligence about them far greater than what a lot of people give them credit, whether it not being a sociological intelligence, but it is definitely a cognitive thought.
Mm-hmm.
Get a little feedback. Do you hear that?
Well, you're going to. You're on a phone call.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, well, but this is static.
Well, you also have to take consideration that there are psychos in their population. You know, their population is very much like ours. They still have, the ones that will operate under normal settings, and you have others in their group that quite possibly could be killers. We have them too. So. And, you know, when you start talking about, you know, how people go missing out further west, it could be that clan. It could be that clan. It could be that individual, you know, and that's one of the biggest fears. It's kind of like this place in Central Arkansas. Who am I meeting up there? Is this guy chemically balanced, or is he a killer?
Yeah.
And that's always in the back of my mind when I go into investigation.
Randy?
Yeah.
Sitting on a creek bank down there in northeast Texas, how many times have you ever got just an eerie feeling?
Once.
Really?
Yep.
Could you attest it to anything?
No. There's been a couple of times now outside of the woods that I was going like to a job interview. And you walk up to the building and say, you know, this just ain't the right place. This is not right. You know, you can sense that. I was squirrel hunting one day. And like you, and it was, you asked the question, but that was literally where I was at on a creek bank, because it was kind of about a 3 foot deep creek. And I was just sitting there with my feet hanging down. Cause I was small. Couldn't touch the bottom of the creek, just sitting there. And then that feeling like, you know what? It's time for me to get up and go. There was only one time that has ever happened that I ever felt that way.
Hmm.
Could you tell a direction?
I can't hear you. What'd you say?
Could you tell if there was something directional from that feeling?
No.
Hmm.
It was just the area that I was in. Well, I'm getting a lot of echoing and feedback for sure.
Yeah, I'm working on it. Okay, is the feedback
stopped? There we go. The feedback, I can the echo's here, but the noise ain't.
Yeah, I was charging my phone as we was going, and it was giving me a ground loop. How's that on echo?
That's a lot better.
Okay, sorry about that, guys. Patrick?
But yeah, that, it's just the area that I was in, I believe. It wasn't directional or, you know.
You just had that eerie feeling. Did you feel like you needed to get out of there, or what was
it? Yeah, that's what I said. It was just, it's time for me to leave, you know. Yeah, I didn't hear no voice, or I didn't hear nothing, or all that other woo mess. It's just that when you sit down, you know, I just don't think I should be right here. So I get up and leave.
Well, Randy, I'm going to tell you something that it sounds weird. This is going to sound strange. But
not coming from you.
It's been my experience that if they're further than about 80 yards,
yeah,
you get this solid feeling, mostly from your knees up, of just something is wrong. And when they get closer than 40 yards is when you actually start feel the direction that they're staring at you from.
Hmm.
And I have played with that to the point where I believe it. And some people don't have to believe that if they don't want to. But that's been my experience with it.
Well, we can take it even on a non-target species aspect. I had the great opportunity in the military career that I was right at the end of a lot of the Vietnam veterans, combat veterans, career veterans. Careers. So, and being in the position I was in the military, we literally say that the Vietnam War wrote the book on guerrilla warfare. And a lot of these guys, not including, you know, the target species or anything, but they had this sense. And we talk about it a lot, this fight or flight. You know, each human has it. It just depends on how much you bring it out, experiences, and you don't have to be a country boy. You don't have to be a city boy. You don't, it comes in all walks of life, but what it comes from is being in like almost like a combat or a hunter's or a predator's, you know, role. Now I will say that, you know, people like Randy, you've been out in the woods a lot. Patrick, you've been out in the woods. I've been out in the woods. We are a little bit more in tune with the woods than a lot of folks, but I've even had, you know, folks from, you know, be talking to people and folks from the city that's not out much, but they just get that feeling. I've always called it being in tune with your surroundings. It doesn't matter where you're at, but you definitely, we as a species have this talent, I guess, or trait that we have subdued with technology. You know, the Native Americans, First Nations people, you know, they definitely were in tune with it. And I would not doubt it a bit, Patrick, with your experience and your, talent for finding these son of a bitches, that you would have that. Because I don't know how many times I've been in the woods sitting, me and dad or me and my wife or me and a couple of friends, whoever, be sitting on a creek bank, and you just get an eerie feeling. It's like, hey, folks, it's time to go. I've been researching with teams of people and be like, hey, this ain't a good area. And they just want to hang around there. And I just get up and leave because I'm not going to put myself in that situation. And go ahead, Randy.
Well, what I was getting at too is it's not necessarily just in the woods. People have those, like what I did when I went up to that interview. I don't think this is the place I need to be.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It can be in the city.
Oh, yeah.
It can be walking down an alley or something. Oh, I don't think I need to be here. And you might not see nobody.
Yeah.
It's just I'm going down the wrong path here. Something's wrong.
But in saying that, in not in contradiction, but in support of that, now when Patrick's talking about with the target species, mm-hmm. I do have a honest belief that they can project, call it infrasound, call it whatever you want, but they can project their presence. Patrick, how would you explain that? I wouldn't say that it's a woo thing or nothing, but they just have subtle ways of letting you know they're there.
I witnessed it come from their eyes. Okay, because I was laying on my bedroll, and I had the little one that I fed the ribs to. He comes up. He's within 10 feet of the back of my shelter looking in. And when he's looking at me, my arms are up like this. And I could feel his stare doing this. Everywhere he looked on my skin, I felt it. And I felt it go to the top of my head. He's looking down. And I feel his stare. And I can't explain it any other way, and I don't know how they do it. Because I've sat there and stared at my kids just.
And try to reproduce it, yeah.
And try to reproduce it. And they're like, Dad, stop staring at me. You're creeping me out. You know? But how does, you know, it came from its eyes. And I could feel it. And it wasn't just me. It walked behind my shelter to where another guy's shelter was tied off and looked in between our shelters, and that guy the same thing too, and called me 2 days later after we left camp and told me about it.
Yeah,
because I didn't tell him. So that's two people, same place, felt the same thing, and I didn't even bring it out in him. I didn't acknowledge or tell him about it because I'm banned from speaking about it. But he calls me up and says, "Hey, dude, this is what I felt, and it was the weirdest stuff ever." And I'm like, "Yeah, it's okay. You know, I understand." And so. Go ahead, Randy.
I'm wondering if it's something like we know turkeys can sense electromagnetism, right? Well, that's already been a scientifically proven thing.
Yeah.
Elk and other things. Now, I wonder if these things being so big that they, when they're sensing our electromagnetism, that they're not putting some out, and that's what we're feeling.
Good point.
And then it could be directional with their eyes.
Yeah.
Because they're looking at you.
Well, I've had them look at me at 6 feet, and I could feel the spots on me that they're looking. I've had them look at me at 115 yards, and it was from my knees up to the top of my head, that creepy, skin-crawling, clammy feeling. And I don't know how they do it. But distance definitely has a factor, a key factor on how much of your body and directionally that you feel it.
You just reminded me of something that I was watching a YouTube video about Hebert Road. Remember that story of Hebert Road way back in the 70s, I think, 76? This police officer said that he was out in the field, and I think it was the police officer said it, but they seen the eyes, the red eyes of this thing. But one of them seen that it looked like lasers was coming out of it, out of his eyes. And I think it was the Hebert Road small town monster show or something that it was on with all the interviews and stuff.
Yeah.
Guy was an older man then, and then he remembered what he seen, that red eyes was projecting, and he could see it coming out of the body, in other words. But nobody else I think seen it.
I don't know. It's they do something.
Yeah.
I don't talk about weird stuff that,
yeah,
you know, I debunk everything. I don't work on, you know, my theory is what my work works on. Mm-hmm. I don't just, you know, I very rarely discuss theory without saying this is, if I'm talking about theory, I'll say, okay, my theory is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that I personally believe and witnessed that close up, you feel their stare pinpoint.
Yeah.
And at a distance, you feel their stare almost all over you. And that for me, that's a fact. And I can't make it a fact for anybody else. But
I go to the electromagnetism.
Well, I will tell you both this. There's got to be something behind this, because one of the first things they taught us in Sears school and a lot of our training was you never look directly at whoever you're watching.
Even a person.
You always look, you know, like at their feet or look, you know, close and keep them in your vision. But I don't know how many times it's weird, you know, being in the situation that I was in. I had a unique situation in my career, but I don't know how many times we was observing people, whether it be through, you know, binoculars or, you know, just our naked eyes or rifle scope or whatever. And it's almost like they turn and look. It's like they feel it. And you can be, you know, 400 or 500 yards away. And us as humans doing it makes you wonder, these things are a lot more susceptible, you know, to that kind of behavior than we are. How much more they, you know, they can feel it, or, you know, how much they can, forecast. I almost wonder too, if it might be something of infrasound, because, you know, the human ear is only, you know, hear at a certain frequency, and anything below and above that we don't hear. And we know animals have been proven, giraffes, elephants.
We might can feel it though.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If some of the times that feeling of dread, that cold dread, like what you was getting, Patrick, you know, up at that distance might be the direct correlation of infrasound, you know. I'd love to get some good audio equipment on somebody that would experience that, that could record sounds at that level, you know, just to see. But we don't know what it is, but we do know that it is there, because Patrick, you've had a lot of experiences like that. I've had it. Randy, you've had it. You know, and I guarantee you 90% of the people that's been in the woods has had it, you know, had it. Mm-hmm. Call it infrasound, call it fight or flight, call it electromagnetism, call it woo, call it spiritual forecasting, whatever you call it. There is something there. And that's what
I got one for you. How many times have either one of y'all are walking through the woods and stopped and then looked down and there's a snake?
Oh, bunch.
You see what I mean? You sensed it and stopped before you even stepped on it.
Oh, yeah. And then all you hear is a scream and a fat boy running through the woods.
I got a good story on that.
But the fat boy running through the woods?
almost. This fat boy jumped out of a creek real quick. I was squirrel hunting, and I was in a creek probably, you know, 10 foot wide, 5.5 foot deep, sandbars in it. And it's before daylight, and I get down in this creek and I'm kind of making my way down. You know how you can get down and you look up at the first light and you can pick the squirrels out,
mm-hmm.
you know, on the top of the trees. Well, something told me to stop. I just felt like I needed to stop. So I'm stopping. I'm standing there and the sun starts coming up a little more. And I look at my feet and there's a water moccasin.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like 6 inches off my feet. And so I took my shotgun, I stuck it down on his head and pulled the trigger. Well, you know what happens when you shoot into water and sand? It just blows up everywhere. It blows up everywhere. And I'm looking down, I can't see the snake. The snake comes down and drapes over my arm. I come unglued.
Didn't do that again, did you?
I shook him off. I look like Curly off of the Three Stooges that just saw a ghost. Oh, I shook him off my arm. He lands on what's left of the sandbar. And I think I made it out of that creek in one bound.
Did you keep your gun in your hand?
I did keep my gun in my hand. And then I walked all the way back out to the house. I said, I'm done. I didn't squirrel hunt for a while.
I told you about that time that old sow pig run me up a tree, didn't it?
Mm-mm.
I didn't keep the gun. I had to drop the gun to climb the tree.
Hey, Randy, it's going to be your show because I got to run. I got to run and take care of a little business. I'll be right back.
All right. While both of y'all left. Well, I don't know what we're going to do with these two, but when they get back, it's going to be pretty close to my bedtime. But I've had a pretty good time.
Guess everybody left me.
Yeah, Patrick had to go to the bathroom.
I had to go let my dog out myself. He was coming in here doing a potty dance.
and I told everybody that it's getting pretty close to my bedtime.
Yeah, I think we've done enough tonight. Folks, we appreciate everything. Sorry we're so informal. This is just a crazy informal show for tonight. That's the reason we usually pre-record things so we can edit it. But, man, now I'm getting a feedback.
Yeah. But we don't like to edit our stuff.
No, I usually
pretty good.
Usually keep you guys pretty solid. But in saying that, folks, I'm gonna end the broadcast here on the deal, and then we guys gonna stay online for just a few minutes and discuss some private matters. But thanks for coming on, Randy. Appreciate you coming on, Patrick. I know you're in the bathroom. Appreciate you coming on. We'll catch you folks next time. We're gonna try to do some more live shows like this. Once again, thank you for staying with us. Be sure and hit like and subscribe on the stations, and we will catch you folks next time. And then saying that, I'm gonna shut down the live. Give me just a second. Well, if I can pull it up. We're still live, by the way.
No way.
Yeah, just a stop stream here. And then come over here. End broadcast.